When we say we're your fandom podcast, we really do try not to just say that. And we do try to actively pursue your opinions, swear to God. We figured that we weren't the only ones with opinions about the idea of canon divergent, canon compliant, alternate universes, all of that. And so we went ahead and threw a poll up on the Twitter regarding which one do you like to read or write best. Now, I know that this was setting some of you up for failure. I respect that. But Twitter only gives us four options, and we had four things we wanted to see if you, like, what you guys read or wrote the most. So the options were canon divergent, canon compliant, non-compliant, non-AU, like 2012 Tower Fix, again, like we said already, and a complete AU. Ferret, I don't know if you, have you gotten a chance to look, or do you want me to surprise you?
I peeked in the beginning, but I don't know where it stood when it closed. So hit me.
Okay. Well, it was pretty much a dead heat between canon divergent and complete AU.
Yeah. I'm not super surprised. First of all, I know some people didn't know what we meant by non-compliant non-AU, which is why we talked about it in the last segment. But yeah. I also think that we know people love AUs. We've talked about that before. They're very popular, and canon compliant is both hard and, you know, and also it's like, we're here to be transformative. So the vast majority of people like to transform things a bit, you know, I get it.
Yeah. Like HT said on the server, as a reader, all like anything from so canon compliant, it can barely be called pre/ to the only thing that's tethering this fic to canon is the character names.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe if we'd had an all of the above / more than one choice, that one might have taken it.
Yeah, for sure. And I think we got into a really interesting discussion on the Discord about what does compliant mean in terms of a transformative work, like you and I, you know, talked about. And I really like what Robin said, so I'm going to read that out. You're welcome, Robin. The only time I think canon compliant is truly compliant is when it's something that happens off screen or introspectively and doesn't change or affect what happened after. So if it's, say, Steve angsting over his unspoken love for Tony after Tony died in Endgame, but still Steve still goes back to the 40s and marries Peggy, then that's compliant.
Yeah. And I think that vibes with what we were saying earlier, at least with, yeah, that's how I feel.
It's been interesting when I've entered into like exchanges or when I've taken commissions, and I think I'm fairly well, if you know my writing, you know that I write AUs. Like I don't think I'm particularly well known for being a canon based writer, if I'm well known at all. And yet people will still ask me for canon stuff, but what they're asking for is a 2012 Tower fic. Like they're not asking for me to do like a battle scene. They're asking for me to write where Clint lives in the vents.
Yeah.
And they want 2012 Tower fic plus Bucky.
Yeah.
And Sam, pretty much. And so that's still transformative to me. That's still an AU, whether I complete the entire world or, you know, like it's interesting. It's interesting how people track with this stuff. But yeah, like I said earlier, no fic to me can be completely canon compliant because everything is transformative, or we wouldn't be writing fic. The minute I make anybody gay, it's not canon compliant to me.
It's definitely like, it feels like one of those things where I want to have like a panel with 9 people and really rip it apart and dive into it, because people have all sorts of different backgrounds with it. And like, it's one of those things that matters so much also what fandoms you were in when you learned the terms, you know, and what the history of it is to you and what kind of ships you've liked in the past. And you know, we are specifically a Marvel and Steve Tony podcast, but so much of what we talk about is bigger than that. We try to talk about fandom as a whole, but there are things like this where it matters so hugely what the fandom is that, like, from the start, if we're in a ship that can't and will not be made canon, then yeah, can we ever say it's canon compliant? And, or do we just merely move the goalpost a bit of what canon compliant means within our little world? I don't know.
That's fascinating, because even when I wrote like, you know, heterosexual fic, or I wrote fic that like was hinted at in canon, like none of my ships were canonical except for Pacey and Joey. And, even anything I did with them in Dawson's Creek, for anyone who didn't know. And anything I did with them wasn't canon compliant. So it's just, yeah, it's really, really fascinating. And I don't know if this is different currently in any, if there are fandoms out there where the canon ship is very popular in fic, but in my experience, people write fic to write what they don't see in canon. So I'd be very intrigued to know, like Old Guard fandom, I think, like those two, I saw Old Guard once and then it fell out of my brain. But they are, the ship that everyone loves is canon compliant, correct me, or am I correct?
Yes, yeah, yeah. Joey, right. Nikki, the most popular, I believe that's the most popular pairing in Old Guard is Joe Nikki, and that's totally canon, totally, totally canon, on-screen canon.
Yeah, and most of Schitt's Creek, the largest number of fic is Patrick and David, but that's, they just want to give Patrick and David porn scenes, I think, which I approve of, so that's completely fine. So yeah, this would be a very different conversation if we were talking about like Check Please, for instance, too, so.
Yeah, yeah. So statistics-wise, within Marvel as a huge umbrella, if you look up canon compliant as a tag, which is a canonical tag, there are 5,296 works in Marvel that are tagged canon compliant. If you look up canon, it's called alternate universe canon divergence, you get 27,134. So a few more.
So there's a bit of a skew.
Just a couple, yeah. The math makes it pretty clear what people's preferences are. And also AO3 defines canon divergence inherently as alternate universe. So that's interesting too.
Yeah, that's something we can dig into at a later time. I mean, a part of this canon divergence, canon, you know, thing, to go back to the very beginning of this conversation you and I started having, I mean, I don't know, maybe our second or third Zoom conversation, was about the nature of ships.
Right.
And the nature of relationships and the nature of platonic friendships. And I think one of the things I love the most about Marvel is that there are so many characters with so many different dynamics that you can take a canonical friendship and, you know, insert some unresolved sexual tension and all of a sudden you have a romantic relationship.
Yeah.
And within the MCU movies, you know, one of the people that Steve has that kind of thing with that we don't talk about as much as Tony or Bucky is Nat. It's very, very clear that, you know, not only in Winter Soldier, but then in Endgame, some of this could just be that, you know, ScarJo and Evans danced around each other for how many years dating on and off. And I think he's like still really like, I think he's good friends with her husband now. But they have a chemistry that really helps inform that. But the way I read the last scene, the scene in Endgame where he finds her in the bunker before Tony comes back is like that they've been checking in with each other constantly throughout this 5-year period. And Evan said in interviews that he and ScarJo both believe that Nat and Steve like fucked off screen. And that's how they played the scene. So it's very, you know, it made, one of the reasons it didn't make any sense for me for him to kiss Sharon in Civil War, the way they were setting things up, was that I absolutely thought they were setting up a Steve Nat arc with the way that the two of them were playing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of canon there to support it. And I think when we talk about canon compliance and canon divergence, it is one of those things where it's a ship where I think you could fill in enough gaps to create a ship there without necessarily violating canon directly. Like there's enough holes and enough gaps and enough teasing and enough actual content between the two of them that there would be enough that you could totally fill that in, and you could write a fic that starts with Winter Soldier where something happens, and then, you know, maybe at Sam's place, and then shifts through Civil War and ends up with that 5-year gap. There's so much space in that 5-year gap to be able to write things that are canon compliant to the degree that we can you know, shift that boundary just a little bit and still say, yeah, all of Endgame can happen exactly as it's shown on screen. And here's what was happening between Steve and Nat behind the scenes.
And Steve proves to us just how much not a virgin he really is. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think it's that their ship is one that I am not entirely sure why it did. The only reason it didn't catch on to me is that Steve has bigger chemistry or bigger canonical chemistry, especially with Bucky and Tony. But if you are not somebody who is into slash ships, which those people still exist, I would argue that Steve and Nat is your non-pepperoni canonical option if you want a het ship.
Yeah.
I like writing them as side ships a lot. They are off. If Steve is not with Sam in a Winter Iron fic, then he's with Nat. It's always one of those two. Actually, one that I'm writing right now, I've made them a V with where Nat and Sam are not together, but they are both with Steve, because that's something I could definitely see happening in the way that their characters kind of all work together. I really like playing with the dynamic of that Nat is simultaneously the sister that Steve has always needed and the wife he needs to keep him on track. And I like playing with that a lot, I'll be honest. I read it a lot more than I write it, but that's also because no one's commissioned it from me yet. Maybe they will someday. Ooh. And I like the... Yeah, there's very few, very, very few ships I don't want to try my hand at least once. I mean, I did Tony Nat and had a ton of fun with it.
I've mostly written them like besties. I do a lot of like wingman Nat kind of stuff where she's either best mm-hmm. friends with Tony or best friends with Steve, or, you know, the one navigating in between the middle of them having some kind of relationship drama. And we did one episode of Held that was a threesome and it was with Nat. And it got mixed results, mixed response to that one. We actually had a translator who was translating it into Russian for a while. And she did a whole chunk of Held into Russian and was posting it on a Russian fanfic site in Russian with all Russian comments. And Ashley and I used to like to go and use Google Translate and see what people were saying about it. They all hated the threesome episode so much that when she got to it in the translation, she just skipped it and went to the next one. And no one was upset. No one wanted it. They'd all read it in English already. They wanted to read it in Russian too. And they would talk in the comments about how they hated that one and it doesn't exist for them. It's not part of Held canon. So I thought that was really interesting that particular group was like, nope, no Nat in that, Stony. So,
well, I was about to say, I mean, I like that as a threesome and I've read fixed tagged with the three of them. I wouldn't want it injected and Held either. And I remember I remember making a face when I got to that chapter. I was like, oh, I don't know. Because the way you guys write Steve and Tony in that series in particular is so intense that like, even just for a sexual liaison to add anybody else in felt a little bit like you guys did such a good job with Stony. That it wasn't like I didn't hate it, but I was like, it wasn't like I hated it. I was just like, oh, this is a difference.
Yeah, it was, some people loved it. Some people hated it. It was really interesting seeing how divisive the response to that could be. And I don't really know what the response to the ship is on AO3 in general. In the Steve Nat tag, there's only 4,957 works, which is just a little bit less than how many canon compliant works there are in Marvel. So like just about as much, but that's not nothing. That's 248 pages of fix. So, I mean, obviously I'm guessing the vast majority of them are side ship, but.
Yeah. And that's one of the reasons I actually have stopped tagging side ships.
Yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah, I do it in other tags like background that or minor that or something there. I try not to put them in the relationship tag.
It is one thing I think that as much as there's sort of ways to work around it, the ideal solution would actually be to have a primary relationship section, like for relationships to have primary relationship and then all other relationships, because you get people on both sides. You get people saying, I hate this relationship and I don't even want it as a side ship. And so if it doesn't get tagged and then it ends up being in it, it really bothers me. And you get people who have this primary relationship, but there's one or two secondary relationships that are really, really important to the story. So they can't be ignored. Like, for instance, I have one where Stony is the ship that's like having an arc and getting together, but the entire long fic takes place at Bucky and Clint's wedding. So if you hate Winterhawk, you're really not going to want to read that story. And it can be really hard to like express the difference, but there's no easy way to sort out fix where your small ship is not but a side ship. So yeah, I know that it's been requested, and I'm sure it's on a list on some dev's desk at AO3 somewhere to consider. And obviously it's one of those things where, like, thinking about it from a dev perspective, you've now got millions and millions of stories on AO3. If you add that feature to it, so many fics aren't going to use it because those authors are no longer engaging with their fics in any way. And how do they automatically make it so the first ship that person listed becomes the primary ship? And it's an assumption. And if it's older than 2022, you might not be ag, you know, there's a whole lot to consider. So who knows if it'll ever happen, but I do think that Steve Knatt would definitely be one of the ships that ends up suffering from side ship syndrome.
Yeah. So if you agree with us or disagree with us, as always, we'd love to hear from you. If you have some Steve Knatt content that you would like us to engage with, or you have a prompt for me to write Steve Knatt, I'm definitely in a place right now where I feel out of original ideas. So somebody wants to throw me some prompts, I am open to filling them for sure, especially.
That's a sweet deal, guys. You got to snatch that up.
The well is dry, friends. The well is dry. So, and please don't make me work on my MTH fix. They're just sitting there staring at me, judging me, hating
me. She says the weekend of the MTH party.
Yeah, exactly. I'm being vulnerable out on Main here. This is where we're at on April 25th, 2021. But I do love me some Nat Romanoff, and I love her as meddling. I love her all the time, to be completely honest. And she is so enigmatic that I love shipping her both platonically and romantically with a whole host of people, but definitely, definitely Steve. So if you're in that boat, hit us up in the comments. We'd love to hear from you as always.
If you are at all involved in Marvel Trumps Hate, or if you're in the Marvel Trumps Hate Discord server, you might have noticed that this weekend we are running a Marvel Trumps Hate creator party. Flame and I, as both mods for the event, are also modding the party. And that gave us the idea to do a bit of a special one-off edition of Life of an Event, just to talk about what it's like to run a server party, what that means, what it can entail, what kind of planning you need to put into it, in the hopes that if anyone else wants to host a server party of their own, it'll give them a little bit of the behind the scenes, backstage, helpful info.
There's a bunch of things to keep in mind when you're planning a server party. And to be honest, one of the very first things is timing. You really don't want to do it on a weekend where there's a big deadline, for instance, of a massive fandom event. Or like an offline, like, I don't know. I wouldn't personally have a fandom event on like the weekend of New Year's Eve.
For sure. And it can be really hard actually to find a time that's going to suit everybody. Like if you're taking into account global holidays and fandom events and religious holidays and even the time of year, because this time of year, a lot of people are out in their gardens. Or anything else that might have an impact. Obviously, it's not possible to be perfect, but it's certainly worth a little bit of thought, maybe even a poll to see how many people would be able to host it, depending on when you host it. And honestly, one of the most important things with picking the date for it is that your mod team is going to be available, because at the end of the day, if no one's there to run it, it ain't going to happen. So first things first, check in with the people who are going to be organizing it and pick a date that's good for you. And then you also want to make sure you're picking a date that'll be good for the people that you want to participate.
And part of that is to think about what the point of the party is. So you want to think about, are you doing this to build, like, you know, camaraderie among the server? And then maybe it is most important that most people join you. Are you doing it as some sort of, specific event around a thing that you're running that you know not everyone's going to be into. So like only having a handful of people be available might be okay because it just happens to be the thing. So drilling down why you want to do it can also help inform this question. For MTH, the idea was to have as many creators within Marvel Trumps Hate as possible, and also to have a couple different ones throughout the year so that there could be check-ins and some time to create and kind of a longevity thing, not just a one-off, to kind of build these parties into the general schedule of Marvel Trumps Hate instead of just Marvel Trumps Hate being a one-off thing. We also wanted to create kind of a vibe, camaraderie, some off-season antics, so to speak, that people could take inspiration and some kind of creative juices flowing to help them finish their fills. So then that contributed to the times that we wanted to be able to have those parties. We didn't want it too close to the original event. We didn't want it too close on either end, either right after it or right before it, you know, things like that.
If the point of your party is like for example, I help run the Alts Day party every year, that happens around Alts Day. So there isn't really a lot of flexibility. It's the same day every year. So we try and make sure that the party itself runs long enough that people are going to get a chance to participate. But the timing for that party ends up more being, you know, what time of day are we going to do the movie showings and stuff like that. So there's the greater timing question, what day or days are we going to host the party? And then within that, what times are we going to have party events? And that actually is something that takes a little bit of practice to nail down. I know that our first MTH party, some of the games were too close together and I wasn't prepared for how long people were going to want to play some of them, because some of the games people got really into. And if it's the kind of game where people can kind of put their hand up and get added to the end of a queue in order to do something, that queue can get really long, which makes the game run really long. And it's awesome that people are excited. And I was really glad people were playing the game, but all of a sudden we weren't done the first game and it was already almost time for the next game because it had run for hours. So if you're going to plan out events within your server party, like games or movie showings or what have you, make sure that there's enough time between them. First of all, that you can fit the whole movie in if you're doing a movie, or that enough people will get to play the game if you're playing a game. And also that there's enough time for a break for you and for the party goers, because by the time you get to the end of someone's day, or if they've been doing several games in a row or something like that, they might be pretty wiped. They need to eat, they need to pee, they need to walk the dog. But additionally, by spreading things out, you also expand the number of people who are going to be able to show up time-wise. If you run, you know, if you have 3 days and you run your movie showing every single one of those days at 8 p.m. Eastern time, then the only people who are going to be able to see that are people who are in time zones where they're going to be available at 8 p.m. Eastern time. A good chunk of the world is asleep at 8 p.m. Eastern time. So it's the kind of thing that the timing question has a lot of layers, and it's worth thinking about what you're going to do at every layer. And I would really recommend, if you're going to do any kind of timed events, games or movie showings or you know, music playlist things, anything, whatever you come up with, that you consider every layer of the impact on timing.
And this is a great time to remind you to check in with your mod team. Because if a lot of you are in different places around the world, assign different things. Just flat out say like, hey, I'm not going to be able to be a part of this because I'm going to be asleep or I have a meeting or whatever, but someone on the team might be able to handle it. So this is another reason that planning is important, because then you can make sure that the kind of all the angles of this thing are covered. Because the besides the timing of like timed events, like Ferret just brought up, you also want to be sure that you have spaces within it, if this is a creator party, for people to create things and not just play games. Or if it's a like an Alts Day, one of the things is for kind of newbies to Alts to be able to ask questions. So you want to be able to create spaces for that to happen. And all of those kind of things is a real balance between having enough for people to do this, so they stick around, and having too much. One of the people who was a master at this was Tisvin when she ran the Tony Stark bingo server parties and really figured out a way to keep everybody involved, but not seemingly make anyone feel overwhelmed. And I know one of the ways that she did that was to be very clear about when games were running and when they weren't, and very clear when games were over, you know, and it wasn't just going to keep going forever because she wanted people to get back to creating and things like that.
So once you've got the timing sorted out and you're trying to pick maybe some specific activities or games to play, or even just designing how you're going to present and advertise the event itself, one of the things that's really important to think about is who you're including and who you're excluding with each of the aspects of your party. So inevitably, these things can't be for everyone. They just can't. It's just not how it works. It's going to be limited to people in your fandom, in your ship, people in your Discord server, people in a certain event. In some way, it's going to be limited, and that's totally fine. These things shouldn't be for everyone. But you don't want to incidentally exclude people who are part of the group that you're trying to host the event for. So in addition to thinking about time zones and making sure that you're hitting points in time where hopefully most people from most time zones are going to be able to catch at least part of the event, you also want to think about things like if the games require art skills or writing skills, you might want to make sure that there's a balance of those types of games. For the MTH server parties, we always make sure that there's three games each day. One is an icebreaker that's kind of a generic party game. One is a art game, which generally you don't need to be good at art to do. You just have to have a desire to make stick figures at the very least. And one is a writing game, which again, you don't have to consider yourself brilliant at writing, but you have to be willing to put some words on paper. So think about, you know, how much time are people going to get to produce something if they're producing something? Are they going to be able to participate in the game if they don't have, you know, a stylus to draw with? Or if English is their second language, are the rules going to be hard to understand? A big one for server parties is, do people need to be in voice chat, and do they need to be to have a mic and have their microphone on? I know there are a lot of games that seem like fun and you may have played them with groups of people online and it was great, but if you're running a server event that's supposed to be as inclusive as possible for the server, there are generally a large proportion of people who are not comfortable on voice chat. So I think that there can be a line there, you know, one game that requires voice chat or games where you need to be in voice chat, but you can mute your microphone if you want to, are just that little bit more inclusive than games where you have to be able to hear what your team say or say things out loud to each other, or that require art skills to do that kind of thing. So that is definitely worth thinking about.
Now, a big part of anything in charge of a server or an event is participation. This is not something that you want to spring on the members of your server. This is something that they should know about ahead of time. So if they've got some offline stuff that they want to be able to juggle or can juggle, they have the opportunity to do that. Obviously, you don't want to have an event where no one shows up. So give people a chance to, you know, show up. And maybe even if you're low on ideas, or you know what you want to accomplish but you're even not sure how to do that, ask the server members what they'd like to do and figure out something from that way. In the same way, you can take your cues from them while the party is happening as well. There are parties that just don't quite grasp the group, grab the group's imagination the way you think they're going to. So know when to, you know, in the immortal words of Kenny Rogers, know when to hold them and know when to fold them. And when the game isn't working, it's okay. It's not your failure as a party host. It just means it's not working in that moment for any number of reasons. And that's okay.
You can always delay a game, say, okay, not enough people are here. We're going to wait an hour and try this again. Or, you know, swap out for another game, ask people what they would like to play. Additionally, I have found that a great thing is to get people to react with an emoji when there's a game that they want to play, even if they don't need to say, like, sign up exactly for a game, by saying, hey, react to this post, hey everyone, or, you know, at whichever group of people are involved. React with this emoji if you're gonna play this game, and then you have an idea of if there's enough people there to make the game work, especially if there's a minimum number of participants that the game requires. And then, you know, if the game's good to go, you can let it sit there for a little bit, you know, 10, 15, even 30 minutes. You can wait until you've accumulated enough people that the game is going to be good to go. Or if you don't get enough people, you can say, not enough people, we're going to leave it an hour, or we're going to move this game to a different time slot, or we're going to scrap this game, or whatever it is. And by having that kind of, if you have a very light, open, flowy attitude towards it, then people will feel, you don't want to make people feel guilty for not wanting to play a game. It's all an experiment. If they're not into it, no problem, move on, and there'll be something else that'll fly later on in the event. So yeah, I think a lot of planning, but then on the day of, you have to be willing to be a little bit flexible.
Just a reminder to make sure that you plan breaks for yourself too, like Ferret already said, but I want to just bring that back. It can be very easy to get caught up, but if you've got to step away, have some backup plans in place for that. And also make sure to, you know, remember that we all often need screen breaks. So closing the computer or putting down the phone every once in a while is always a good idea. It's easy to get caught up, but just remember that in terms of your physical and mental health as well. Just a little note, it's real easy to stay glued all the time.
One other note that I think can really help, especially with drumming up participation or getting people wanting to be engaged, is if your server or your event that the server is connected to or what have you has some way of rewarding people for showing up. So for Marvel, we do a point system where you can earn points to get a special role. The role doesn't really do anything, but you get the points by participating in the party. And it just gives people a little bit of incentive to just do some of the other stuff that gets those channels lighting up, which brings other people in because they see that there's action going on. So thinking about if there's a way to do some kind of, what are they called? Like party favors or a special role or a trophy or an emoji in people's names or some little way to thank people for showing up and giving them just a little bit of incentive to check it out, then that can go a really long way towards bringing more people in. And the more people you have, the better the events will go, the more excitement there'll be, and more people will come in. So that's one way to drum up a little interest.
If you've got further questions about server events, or you've run one and something went super, super well and you'd love to tell us about it and we didn't mention it, remember that we love hearing from y'all, and you can get a hold of us across any of the socials, the email, we can probably answer smoke signals at this point on some level. The Pony Express still stops outside my door. Find us some way so that we can continue this conversation. And now it is time for everyone's favorite or maybe favorite or something they maybe just enjoy part of the episode. To rope off! Ferret, update please.
Okay. I left you off last time with humor/crack versus found family. And I said we all know what Flame's going to vote for. And I feel like I did know who you voted for. And I feel like almost everybody agreed with you.
Yeah. Humor crack is a weird one for people. Everybody wants to be able to laugh in a fic, but they don't like often want it to go into crack, quote unquote. I'm using air quotes.
Yeah. I think having humor in a fic is something that almost everybody values, but a fic that is purely about being a joke, I think can be fun, but it's a one-off special kind of thing, like the ABO turkey story. It's funny, it's great. Yeah. I Am Groot is the most upvoted or most kudos fic on AO3. We get it, but at the end of the day, that's not why people are in fandom for the most part, I guess. Though it didn't get totally obliterated. Humor crack took 24% and found family took 76%.
So that's not bad.
That's a quarter.
Yeah, that's respectable.
Yeah. So, and yeah, I get it. And it's very much one of those things where it's like, it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, the thing for trope off I say is always, if there was a fic and it only had one tag and it was that tag versus the other tag, which of the two would you click on? And I mean, some people don't love found family. I mean, you know that I'm not a huge person for lots of extra characters, and I do love the Avengers, but if the whole, like, I don't read any Gen Avengers group stories at all.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in all of their six-way familial love for each other. I think it's great. I want it in the background. I don't mind happy scenes where they're enjoying being grouped together, but I mostly read fic for romance. So the found family aspect for me, not a big deal, not a big deal. So maybe I'm someone who would actually prefer humor, because I have definitely read some very, very funny fics that I really loved. So I feel it. I do feel it.
That makes sense. I've clicked on humor. I've clicked on humor before. I've never clicked on crack as a tag.
Have you read the Turkey ABO story?
Oh, I'm sure. And like it was enjoyable, but not nearly as much as it was to other people. So yeah, it doesn't scratch my itch as much. And I don't read any gen fic at all unless it's from an author I already know. Like, I never go hunting for gen fic. Mm. I've written two or three because the prompt that was in my brain fit better focusing on a character instead of their specific relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But like, it's not, yeah. Oh, like Avenger. I mean, I don't read a lot of OT6 porn either. Like, all of them as a group isn't necessarily my thing. Like, I love found family, but I really, like, I never write about Clint. I never write about Thor. I never write about Bruce. Like, I kind of create my own found family in
very
that
specific, like, found family
characters. Yeah. Like, I've hobbled together the found family I write about all the time. Right. So it's, and I always write, I mean, I write AUs. We all know I do. So I treat all of this a little bit differently. But yeah, no, I voted for found family. Duh.
So in the middle weekend, we had an interesting one, a bit unusual perhaps.
Okay.
So we had crossovers versus aliens made them do it. Do you have a guess?
Aliens made them do it.
You are correct. It did win. Not by as much of a margin as the last one. Crossovers took 38% and aliens took 62%.
Okay.
This is another one where the origin of the trope aliens made them do it, because it used to be like a tag thing. Like it was a idiomatic phrase almost. It was a cliche. It was a thing. It was a thing people knew. And it was always that aliens had made them have sex, and that's what made them realize that they had feelings for each other. And that was a very done thing. But I think that it gets interpreted now as aliens made them do anything. Like if the plot is spurred by aliens, I've seen people tag things as aliens made them do it. So that's one of those ones where I want to know what the specific meaning of that. If they saw a fic tagged with that and only that, how would they interpret it on a story?
That's funny. I would only interpret it as sex. So that's interesting. But I also don't read a lot of things that would be tagged with aliens. So I haven't had as many encounters with that tag as you have.
It was definitely a thing for a while early on. I feel like Faber maybe, or more of a comics inspired thing.
Well, I mean, the next chunk of movies are all going to be space-based, I think. So yeah, we are
venturing out there.
We're venturing out there. So maybe we'll get more.
I feel like combining the two is just begging for a Star Trek crossover.
Or Stargate or Firefly. I love a good Firefly crossover.
Firefly would be an interesting crossover. I think the vibe, the snark and banter and they found family amongst the Firefly cast would both mesh and clash nicely with the Avengers vibe. So maybe a crossover where Firefly gang meets Avengers gang circa 2012. See what happens.
Yeah, let's put up the two found family Whedon verses, essentially.
That could be fun.
That could be really fun. I like the idea of Mal and Tony like absolutely hating each other in a way, and Steve just laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
Like, oh, how does it feel, Tony? Yeah. But crossovers, I think the most popular one in terms of numbers would be a Harry Potter
one. Yeah, I think that's.
And there are people, I see like absolutely no Hogwarts AUs a lot on do not want lists increasingly on in exchanges that I'm in or events I'm in. So, you know, there's a, in order for there to be a crossover, you have to really like the other property. There's not, I think, a ton of people that will read any crossover, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it's so, definitely a niche appeal. I think it sort of ends up getting sidelined the same way that OCs do. Like,
yeah,
since you have to really like both fandoms enough to love them both, but also to do them at the same time, is a niche skill and a niche desire. So
yeah, my favorite one I've fallen into has been Batman and Tony, and it's been Bruce Tony fix.
I have seen, yeah, there was a little trend of that for a while there too.
And those were good. There's a couple Hogwarts crossovers. I've tried a lot. I've not enjoyed a whole hunk of them.
Mm.
But there's some that I've tried. I'll click around sometimes. I read at one point, again, no one is allowed to ask me for the link to this, but at some point I read I want to say Winter Iron. Yes, it was Winter Iron and Supernatural.
Oh, that sounds vaguely familiar. I think I might have read that one a little bit. That's a rare instance where I read and enjoy and have written in both of those. So that's something I might like. I know there was some bandying about, I've actually written a very, 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 very short snippet of what would have been a Buffy, Angel, and MCU crossover. But where they have to sing at Lauren's club. But yeah, I mean, I was never in Harry Potter, so I know that there are a fair number of crossovers for Harry Potter, but I've never read any Harry Potter fics, so that wouldn't really appeal to me, but.
And this is how it goes. Like, and there's fandoms that I absolutely love that I wouldn't want to smush together with MCU. Like I still.
You want an MCU West Wing crossover.
God, I could. Well, that's just like, I wrote that already in a way. Because I had some West Wing characters kind of show up surreptitiously in Rose Garden.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, and Bartlett was a president in the past, and Santos was like, Bartlett and Santos were presidents in the past in that AU. So what was I going to say? No, I wouldn't want like MCU and Gilmore Girls.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that would be hard to do, but there's a scope issue there, right? Like Gilmore Girls is so focused on this one little town and then the MCU, which spawns universes. And it's like, they just don't collide that great. If anyone's done it and succeeded, hats off to you. But I find that hard
like,
to see.
Because this is, instead of a crossover, usually I just want a redo or an AU. Fusion, so like I would, like you and I have joked about doing a Stony Gilmore Girls for our entire friendship.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
And like that would be really fun, but I don't want to read Steve and Tony and Lorelai and Luke.
Yeah. Hit us up with your favorite crossovers though, and maybe we'll make a list. If people have enough to make it a list, we'll share that.
For sure.
So right now, run to Twitter right now. You still have some time to vote in this weekend's Trobaugh, which is going to be an interesting one. We have Arranged Marriage versus Fix It.
Ooh.
Both popular.
Both very popular.
So that'll be interesting to see.
And one that would be difficult to combine.
Yeah, because I feel like, you know, as we been talking about canon and canon divergent and canon compliant and all of that, Fix It has to have IMO at least some basis in canon for you to be fixing something. So no canon arranged marriages in our particular fandom, so that would be challenging.
Yeah, or really a whole lot of canonical romantic relationships in our fandom.
Yeah,
pretty
yeah,
much no. Gonna like three. So like
yeah, it'd have to be like the Shield gives Steve an arranged marriage with someone else to try and get him accustomed to the world, and Tony gets jealous. I don't know. That would be a challenge. Hats off.
I don't know. I could have fun with a Fix It, like a pepperoni Fix It, where there's something about fixing like something with the multiverse and something happens with Tony and they give him like, cause in canon, his lodestone is Pepper, the way the MCU has set up canon.
Yeah.
So like that would be, I could play around with that. I don't love writing pepperoni as much as I used to. So I don't know, but it would be, yeah. If someone's sitting here and talking back to us and telling us how they combine the tropes, please tell us immediately.
That randomly reminded me of a funny post I saw once that said, there's nothing that makes you feel more like a ghost than listening to a podcast and hearing two people trying to remember something that you can remember, like the name of yes. a movie or something like that. And someone's out there going, there's a way to do it. There's a way to do it. You guys are just missing it. Email it to us. Yeah. You don't have to be a ghost. Please. You can be part of the conversation.
Yeah. Or even better, write it for us and gift it to us on AO3. We'd love that.
Or at least set it as a reply on the Twitter poll so that we can read it next time around. Because I do so love seeing what you guys come up with as combo prompts. So yeah, go vote right now. It is open. It will be open for several more hours so you don't miss your shot. And it's open every weekend. And next time we'll be talking about this week, next week, and the weekend after.
This is Only More Love, and I'm back with your events forecast. This is where I'll share with you some of what's going on challenge-wise in a Marvel fandom near you. So buckle up and let's go. The usual note before I start with the current events. You'll be able to find everything I mention in this forecast linked and explained in the show notes for each episode over on podonthesuit.com. On to the fun stuff. The Marvel Bang is back for another round. It's open to all ships and has a minimum word count of 10,000 words. The Bang is open for signups until July 1st for authors, with claims starting on September 25th and posting set from November 14th to December 17th. The mods for the What to Finish auction have announced a mini auction round to support Asian communities in light of recent events. Signups will open on June 15th, and the rest of the schedule, as well as guidelines and other info, can be found on their blog. The signups for the Star Spangled Big Bang are open to artists until June 4th, with claims happening on June 11th. Don't miss out! Stony Loves Steve is back. Centering around Steve in a positive way, this exchange allows for a variety of mediums and is open for signups until May 1st, with posting set for June 22nd. Please come join in the fun. A Steve Bingo has appeared, and signups are open until May 16th. Go grab a card! A Stucky Week has been announced well in advance, as it will run from July 5th to July 11th, but the prompts are already available on their blog, so please go check them out, as well as look at their rules so you can prep beforehand. Now that the fourth round of the Tony Stark Bingo is over, it's time for another series of Flash Bingos. That starts with the first set of mini bingo cards, which will be released on May 1st. The bingo mods are also hosting a server party for Tony's birthday on May 19th. So if you're not already there, go grab an invite, and if you are, don't forget to join. The Iron Strange Big Bang is back, and artists can still join until May 17th. Claims will happen from June 28th through July 12th, and posting is set to begin on November 12th. The Iron Husbands Bingo is back, and you can sign up for a personalized card until May 1st. Also open till May 1st is the Iron Husbands Big Bang. The Bang allows for both a mini and big bang options, one for 5K and one for 15K and upwards, of course. Claims will take place on June 19th, with posting spanning the month of September. Claims for the Sam Wilson Fest are open and will stay that way until April 23rd. Posting will happen between April 24th and May 2nd. There are no minimums, and all mediums are allowed. Don't miss out! Signups and fills for the following are also still ongoing. Marvel Reverse Bang, Cap IM Bingo, as well as the Lights on Park Avenue monthly prompts. And that's it for this episode, friends. This has been your events forecast. Please join us again next episode. Until then, be well and happy shipping.
And that's a wrap on episode 5. Thanks so much to Meg, Dora, Marie, and Only.
Like we said in Comm Talks, we're looking to chat more about the smaller ships attached to these two. So if you're interested in conversing about Steve and Tony with people besides Bucky, make sure to get in touch.
I mean, obviously we can all talk about Bucky forever, but again, the smaller ships, folks. This is your fandom podcast, and we do want to represent as many pockets of this wild and wonderful world as we can. We are only in so many though, so we definitely need you to help us out. Also, please rate and review us on whatever podcatcher you listen to so that other folks can find us and join the fun. Any feedback, comments, suggestions, etc. can be sent to us on Discord, email, or any of the socials.
Thank you so much for listening, as always, and we will see you next time.
You've been listening to Pod on the Suit. Thanks for joining us.